Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. He's in Portland for the PK85 events designed to celebrate a billionaire's 85th birthday. I'm back at home after a few days in New York for CBS Sports Network. If you're watching us on YouTube, please go ahead and smash that like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And if you haven't yet, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please knock that out while you're here. Dead leg, you've been in Portland, I guess, around 36 hours or so far. You spent Thanksgiving watching some of the sport's best teams and best players perform. Walk us through what we need to know so far about the developments in Portland. And if you don't mind, start with North Carolina, because they are the preseason number one team. You led a notebook with them that people can read at CBSSports.com. Preseason number one team in the country, still undefeated, but they don't look anything like the best team in the country. It's been one so-so performance after another so far this season.
It has been. Good morning. Happy Black Friday to you, GP. Happy Black Friday to everyone watching on YouTube. Yeah, and you can hear it. If you're watching or listening, you can hear my voice. I'm obviously 3 hours behind. We went Gonzaga, thankfully. We're not going to talk Zags on this podcast. Other than right now, they rolled. Thank you, Gonzaga, for not making that an interesting game.
That 8 a.m. podcast, in when you're on the West Coast, the rest of us don't care. I remember, I think it was last year, maybe, year before, I get a note from the great people at CBS Sports HQ, and they're like, hey, can you do a 10 a.m. Eastern hit tomorrow morning, live from, you know, outside T-Mobile Arena? I'm like, let me do the math on that real quick. That's a 7 a.m. CBS Sports HQ hit in Las Vegas after a Friday night. Yeah, I did right. It, but oh boy, I know what you're going through. That's what I'm telling you.
No, it's all good. You can see it in my eyes. I woke up no fewer than 25 minutes ago at this point, but I tried to squeeze in as much sleep. Nobody cares, but it was good Thursday. And thank you, Gonzaga, for not keeping me in that building until the very final buzzer there. UNC got things going against Portland. I was there when that one tipped off on Thanksgiving Thursday. And because I think, you know, it got the event going, it's North Carolina. Portland was able to make it a competitive game for pretty much 39 minutes. I think it just stirred up a little bit of conversation about, well, this is, you know, this is the number one team, the number one in the rankings. I pointed out on Twitter that UNC, I think are they 17 or 18 now? Let me refresh this real quick, GP, because they're number one in the poll. They're 19th. Okay, so they are 19 in KenPom as we record this Friday morning, 8:05 West Coast time. And it, you know, they don't look like the best team in college basketball. They haven't looked like the best team in college basketball to this point in the season. And they have not yet. Now, this will change in a few hours here, but they haven't played a team from a power conference. So it's not like they've clung to the number one ranking and, you know, narrowly got by, you know, a Pac-12 team or an SEC team on a neutral court or, you know, a Big Ten team. It hasn't been that yet. That's actually coming here now in this tournament. And then they're going to play next Wednesday. They're at Indiana and then they're at Virginia Tech. So it's going to get pretty interesting in a hurry for UNC. They got an 89-81 win over Portland. Pete Nance tied a career high with 28 points. Caleb Love shot well from the floor in that game, GP. And between Nance and Love, they were the reasons they won. Love had 23. Armando Bacot, Leaky Black, Bull had 11. RJ Davis had 13. But I did talk to Leaky afterward. He expressed gratitude. Thanks again. He really did enjoy coming on the pod back in a few weeks ago. So that was great to talk about. But once we got to matters of talking about the team, he's a great interview. He accepts and he takes on the responsibility of being the team's best defensive player. And when the team collectively is failing defensively, he basically said, I don't even put it on the coaching staff. This is on me. It filters down from me on that side of the floor. We are not getting the job done. He also said, and some of this is in the notebook, but I didn't want to overload the notebook. He was saying that, the energy level when we start these games, and basically it's been five games in a row, 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes into the game, he feels it is two or three notches below what it should be. And it's not like the team, or at least he feels like that's what it is going through warmups, pregame locker room. But they get out there. Maybe it's because, as he said in the piece, because we've got North Carolina on our chest and we're playing mid-majors, we think we're just going to steamroll these teams. It's just not happening. We are the top target. And so there was a lot of interesting things to come out of the game. UNC won 89-81. They pulled away late. The defense is a major issue. There's no doubt about that. Offensively, they can still get the job done. Hubert Davis also said that, listen, and he was alluding to not just Caleb Love, but he was alluding to the whole team, but I think Love as well. There are things happening in games here where it's just freelance. It's just improv. What are you doing? Whatever you're doing right now, that's not what we went through and walked through and scout and practice. So there's a little bit of don't just think you can mess around and get out with a W. It will be intriguing when they have to play Iowa State. I put that as my game in the Final Four and one. So we'll pick that game at the end of the pod. But, a quick takeaway from UNC there. Maybe they'll come out and get the championship. They'll win two more. But if they play again, for the next two games, the way they did against Portland, one of the next two opponents will clip them. They're not going to get out of here without a loss.
Yeah, I understand the idea of we're North Carolina, we're playing UNC Wilmington. It's the season opener. We should be able to get past this no problem. Now we're hosting Charleston. We're North Carolina. We should be able to get through this no problem. Now we're hosting Gardner-Webb. We're North Carolina. We should be able to get through this no problem. And I understand sort of everything is they were in last season's national title game. Their season will largely be judged on where it ends in 2023. I get all that. I guess I would just say I understand entering the season, we don't have tough games to start, so we don't have to be as focused as we, otherwise might be. We don't have to be as deliberate as we otherwise might be. But once you struggle in two or three of these games, it seems like that would be a wake-up call. We're preseason number one. We're still number one. We're undefeated, but we're clearly not playing well. Let's get it together. And so far, that hasn't really happened. I'm with you. If they play the next two games at the level at which they played the previous five, they will not get out of this thing undefeated, and they will not be number one in the country on Monday. And you're exactly right. Leakey's right. The issue so far, and I don't know that it completely falls on him. In fact, I'm certain that it doesn't. But I can appreciate him taking responsibility for that and accountability for that. He should probably sit down with Zach Wilson, maybe talk to him for a minute about taking responsibility for.
My interview with him was the exact opposite of what Zach Wilson did.
Yes. So Leaky Black is no Zach Wilson, but I think I already knew that. North Carolina, again, started the season ninth at KenPom, which seems low for a team that finished in the top 20 at KenPom and returned four starters and added Pete Nance. But whatever, I'm not here to argue with a computer. But they are undefeated and gone all the way down to 19. And I saw you put this on Twitter yesterday, number one in the AP poll, 19th at KenPom. Have we had that big of a discrepancy?
Yeah.
Did you reach out to Ken at all?
I at mentioned him, and he appropriately ignored me on Thanksgiving. He's actually good about that. He gets that kind of stuff all the time. People are like, hey, Ken, tell us what your little computer can spit out on this weird random fact or coincidence. But I've got to believe if that's not a record, it's damn close, because that is a wide disparity between what humans think and what his predictive algorithm has.
And keep in mind that KenPom this early does have data from the past that influences the numbers a bit. But at BartTorvik.com, for whatever this is worth, North Carolina right now is 54th in adjusted defensive efficiency. Like, I'm not saying you can't compete for a national title doing that, but it gets difficult. And so they're going to have to be better. I suspect that they will. And last season should serve as a lesson for all of us. Like, relax. You know, the season is not completed in November or December or even January. It is possible for teams to dramatically improve as the schedule progresses. But North Carolina does need to dramatically improve the way it ended up doing last season. And I would recommend getting to that earlier than it did last season, because last season was, up until like mid-February, a bit of a roller coaster.
Agreed. Let's flip to the other blue blood in the ACC. Duke wins 54-51 against Oregon State. Game was ugly as hell. It was Duke's fewest points in a game in over a decade. Jared Burson had a great stat. Did you see the stat?
Love Jared Burson. I don't think I saw this.
Dude, this is outrageous. So, first of all, Oregon State, they missed a 1-1 near the end, and it might have flipped. It maybe it flips the result of the game, but it goes awry on the front end, and Duke manages to hold on in the final minute there. Here was Burson's stat. Duke's 54 points today against Oregon State were its fewest in a win since November 28, 2006. Also 54-51 against Indiana. Freshman John Shire shot 2 for 10 in that game. It was Duke's second leading scorer with 10 points. So they had not scored that few points in a win since Shire was literally playing and had basically just gotten to campus there. From a percentage standpoint, they shot 26.7% from the field, and it was their worst in well over a decade shooting-wise. Now, credit to Oregon State. They run this combo of literally on same possessions, zone to man to zone. It's this, Oregon State they were terrible last season, but a lot of the general principles of what Wayne Tinkle runs, they're frustrating. They're sometimes, I had a coach tell me, sometimes they can bore you to death with how they play, how they want to grind out the tempo. And Duke got flummoxed by the zone. Now, I asked Shire after if he thought that he'd see a lot of zone in this. He said yes, but at the same time, he said, I didn't prepare my guys well enough for that. They were able to overcome it. And I did write this in the notebook. For as concerning as UNC was on the defensive end, Duke's offensive issues, I actually thought, were more stark. Kyle Filipowski was, again, Duke's best player. He had 19 points. The only other player to get in double figures was Ryan Young, who has managed to become like borderline vital for Duke to this point in the season. And that is not something that people saw coming, the transfer from Northwestern, who's 6'10". You know, he plays below the rim, but a really good passer, and just does so many little things and not so little things to keep Duke competitive. Notable in this game and concerning is that, I know Derek Whitehead's coming off injury, so he's still getting back into his groove. He played 17 minutes in this game, but GP, for the majority of the final 7-8 minutes of the game, Whitehead and Derek Lively, who logged 10 minutes in this game, were on the bench. Jalen Blakes was on the floor. Ryan Young was on the floor. Tyrese Proctor didn't have a good game. Expected to be on the floor. Jeremy Roach, of course. And Filipowski, who is the best player so far. They are having issues offensively right now, to the point where Filipowski is the dude, but they don't have the guy just yet. They are winning because they are incredible at offensive rebounding. They have the number one O rebound rate in the country, 46.5%. I think, I want to say Ryan Young had 8 offensive boards in that Oregon State game. So we're going to pick this as well. Duke Xavier, and I'll get to Xavier's win in a second here. But your quick thoughts on Duke and what they were able to avoid. I mean, a loss would, that would have been rough. But the game was rough in general. But I actually thought Duke's offensive stuff was I don't know. They're good, but I'm not seeing like killer stuff in them quite just yet.
Well, this is always pretty easy for me when you have teams built like this and these types of things happen early in the season. There was a team last season. I cannot remember who it was off the top of my head. I didn't expect to bring them up or else I would know it. But, they were ranked really high in the preseason and then they struggled. And people would say, so why are they struggling? I was like, well, the reason they were ranked so high in the preseason is because they had 2 5-star guys coming in, and neither one of them are playing like a 5-star guy. They're both playing like, this was a few years ago. Maybe it was Florida. This is probably like 5 years ago, I guess. But it was Florida, and they had enrolled some 5-star guys, and neither one of them were playing the way 5-star freshmen typically play. And it was like, if you're trying to figure out why Florida's not as good as it's supposed to be, it's because the reason people thought it would be really good is because of these five-star freshmen, and they're just not performing. And that's more or less on at least one of the things going on with Duke right now. Filipowski has been terrific. But the reason Duke was seventh in the preseason AP poll is because they enrolled, according to 24/7 Sports, three of the top four freshmen in the country. Kyle Filipowski, Dariq Whitehead, Derek Lively. And through five games, and Whitehead missed two of them, and Derek Lively missed part of the preseason with an injury. So there's a possible explanation for this. They both missed preseason time. But Whitehead and Lively, through five games, giving them basically nothing. I mean, Lively, he's averaging 3.4 points, 2.8 rebounds, and 16.6 minutes per game. He is that is not the way anybody thought he would open his college career. So if you take Duke, again, just say, okay, they bring back Jeremy Roach. Cal Filipowski is going to be good, but Whitehead's going to give him nothing. Lively's going to give him nothing. You'd say, well, they're not going to be – they'll be – maybe they'll be good, but they're not going to be great. If you can't get good stuff, great stuff from Whitehead and Lively, there's a limit on what this Duke team can be. And right now, again, it's early, but so far, those guys have been – again, possibly for explainable reasons, but those guys have been ineffective.
Yeah.
And as you know, you look across the country, this freshman class, broadly speaking, I think has been pretty impressive. Nick Smith hasn't played yet. Lively hasn't done much. Whitehead hasn't done much, but Brandon Miller at Alabama has been terrific. Anthony Black at Arkansas has been terrific. Keontae George has been really good at Baylor. Grady Dick has been excellent at Kansas. You know, there's some freshmen who have been really, really good, but the Duke freshmen outside of Filipowski, not so much.
Agreed. I'm waiting to see if either today here on Friday or on Sunday, Tyrese Proctor, Dariq Whitehead, Derek Lively, will any of them step up and have a huge game? I remember being here 5 years ago. Marvin Bagley was tremendous and really helped set the table for that Duke season there. We'll see. It might just be Filipowski who's doing a good job, but he also, a lot of Filipowski stuff, like he's getting it on. He's missing his own shot, getting his own offensive rebound, putting it back. That's not everything. He can shoot. He can handle. He's been the guy there. But just interesting to note, we'll see what happens. I'm going to do a quick...
Real quick, I want to, because Philip in the YouTube chat has got it exactly right. It was Florida several years ago that was highly ranked in the preseason. Some of their five-star freshmen weren't good, and then they struggled. Last season, it was Michigan. That's who I was thinking of. They enrolled these five-star guys, and they weren't performing like five-star players. And so Michigan struggled to live up to preseason expectations for much of that season.
All right, I'll do a quick tour here because we're on a little more of a time crunch for this pod than normal from stuff on Thursday. Iowa State beat Villanova 81-79. Villanova did, like it did against Michigan State, it actually made a push and came back. Caleb Daniels was excellent in that game. It just wasn't quite enough. T.J. Otzelberger, well, as I mentioned before, we're going to pick that game on the way out here. Trying to get, you know, 5-0, 6-0 or better starts for a second consecutive season. Ashuna Shuni played very well in that game, and I actually think that was a very important development for Iowa State. Might have more on him on .com before I get out of Portland there. But obviously, Villanova goes from preseason top 25 team to now being 2-3, and now it's got to play the Portland team that almost beat Carolina. Tough spot for Villanova on Friday. They need to win that definitively. We'll see. Purdue cruised against West Virginia. Zach Edey, my God, 24 points, 12 rebounds. He did have six turnovers, but you know, his growth continues to he could, because of his stats and because of development, could turn into a top 10 player in the country. We'll wait and see on that. I'm not surprised by that outcome. Purdue moves on to play Gonzaga later on Friday. Didn't really allow West Virginia to mess around too much. Connecticut destroyed Oregon. The second time these teams have played in the PK80 event. 5 years ago, UConn versus Oregon in the quarterfinals, UConn won. Christian Vitale said, sorry for beating your team, Phil Knight, but thanks for all the free Nike gear. Amazing moment. Reminisced with some people yesterday about that. Tristan Newton was the big star for UConn yesterday. 23 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, a pair of steals. He hit 5 three-pointers. UConn hit 17 threes. That is a men's school record. Great on UConn. I happened to catch Dan Hurley on his way out of the arena just real quick, and he was obviously as inspired as anything. I caught UConn's practice in the preseason, and he had real hope and belief that they could grow into a top 20 team. They are playing like that right now. We will see what UConn does on Friday. Again, don't want to overreact to one game. We got teams are going to take a loss here. Some teams are going to get to 2-0 and move to Sunday's championship round. But I might even say that UConn might be a little bit ahead of the pace there. I was in the Moda Center, and it was just dead. Oregon, Phil Knight's putting on this damn thing, and you lose 83-59. Not a good scene whatsoever. Xavier beats Florida 90-83. Xavier will play Duke. We will pick that game on the Final 4-1. Really good game for the first 33-34 minutes. Florida missed a couple of bunnies, and when it did that, Xavier got the board, hit a three in transition. That happened, I think, three times, and that was basically the separating factor there. Also big, and credit to Todd Golden for mentioning this in the post game. He said Xavier beat the scout, and by that he meant, who was it? Zach Freeman will hit a three. Zach Freeman hit a three. Desmond Claude hit a three. And Colby Jones went 4-5 from three. Going into the game, none of those players had hit a three yet this season. So Golden admitted, we didn't expect them to be guys to hit six. They went 6 or 7 from the field from beyond the arc. They hadn't hit a three. And he mentioned that as one of the biggest differences in the game. But Xavier, big win. They're going to play Duke. Intrigued for that one. And then I got to mention Bama over Michigan State. Brandon Miller was awesome. 24 points, 9 boards. You know, 5 years ago was Trey Young, even more than Marvin Bagley, came out at this event, right? He was just awesome. And it really put him on that track to having one of the most notable, if not historic, freshman seasons ever. I don't know if that will be Brandon Miller or not at this event from a freshman perspective, but he certainly helped big time. Alabama gets the win, and Michigan State shorthanded. Didn't have Jaden Akins. He's got an ankle injury. Joey Hauser tweaked his ankle. Tommy Izzo said he'll be a go for Friday. And then Malik Hall is out for at least 3 weeks because he has a stress reaction, not a stress fracture, a stress reaction. They don't have him. Not ideal. We'll see how MSU does for the remainder of this tournament. And then they got at Notre Dame, but an understandable loss because they were shorthanded, but now you're kind of compounding injury issues with a really tough schedule. We'll have to wait and see. Very entertaining. Good first day. Almost kind of get the feeling that Friday is going to be actually even a little bit better across the board. Maybe a couple games that are even closer. Just an awesome event. And I can't wait to get back over there in an hour or so here.
Yeah. So just to make sure we got it right. Friday, Phil Knight Invitational semifinals, North Carolina, Iowa State, then in UConn, Alabama. The winners of those two games will play each other Sunday. In the Phil Knight Legacy, the semifinals are Duke Xavier, Purdue Gonzaga. The winners of those games will play each other on Sunday. Dead Leg will be there for all of it. So make sure to keep checking CBSSports.com. Moving on, since we last podcasted, Arizona won the Maui Invitational. Impressive stuff from Tommy Lloyd's program. We're going to get into that next. But first, a word from our partners.
What's up, y'all? This is four-time NBA champ Andre Iguodala.
Yo, and this is his best friend, the Ohio State legend, Evan Marcel Turner I.
Every Wednesday, we drop a new episode on our show, Point Four.
We're talking basketball, business, and all the culture in between.
From locker room stories to some basketball analysis from those who've been in the game.
Now, it is a dude averaging 29 and 11. God, what'd it take to be an all-star?
A win. Subscribe to Point Forward the podcast so you don't miss a thing.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
A reminder, if you want, you can now email the show, shouts2cbs@gmail.com. shouts2cbs@gmail.com. We are loving the responses we've gotten, the emails, the correspondence, the questions. Continue sending them. You can send in a video if you'd like, 10 to 15 second video, ask a question, name, city, town, get out. We'll try and drop those in going forward on the show, on the YouTube channel. Continue to send us stuff. We love hearing from you, and thank you as always for subscribing.
So since we last podcasted, Arizona did win the Maui Invitational, beat Cincinnati, San Diego State, and Creighton in the title game. Dead Leg Tommy Lloyd lost three of his top five scorers from last season's team that won the Pac-12 regular season title, won the Pac-12 tournament, and then secured a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. All three of those players were selected in the top 35 of the 2022 NBA draft. So nobody really thought Arizona would be as good this season as it was last season. Everybody thought Arizona would be good, but as good as last season? Not sure. They were 17th in the AP poll, preseason number 10 at KenPom. But the Wildcats are now 6-0 with three top 100 KenPom wins, and they are overwhelming offensively. I've got Arizona up to number 6 in the top 25, and one could reasonably have them higher. Yeah. Is it possible that Arizona's better even without Benedict Mathurin, Christian Coloco, and Dalen Terry?
I can't go that far just yet. There is certainly the potential for that. Arizona finished as the number 5 team at KenPom last season, and with 4 losses was a number 1 seed. And we know that that team was humming like a machine for much of the season there. Never lost back-to-back games. Never lost 2 games in a stretch that was closer than even 5 games. You know, so they, Tommy Lloyd really did a great job in year 1. And there's a decent chance right now he could repeat that. They go now. I only got to see, my plan was to get to JFK to watch the entire second half. Dude, not going to, you know, drone on about this, but almost 3 hours in traffic getting to JFK.
What?
On Wednesday night. Brutal. So I got to my gate, and then there was a, you know, bar restaurant right there. And there was like 2 minutes to go in the game. So I missed almost the entire Creighton game. I didn't see any of it, but I know they get the 81-79 win. They hold on in the end there, and Creighton kind of came back and closed the margin. But right now, Arizona plays more possessions per game than anyone in the country, more than 77, and they play fast and they are good. They have the number one adjusted tempo at KenPom, and they are shooting 67.4% from inside the 3-point line. Oh, by the way, they're top 5 in 3-point shooting offensively right now, an absolute juggernaut. I think a big reason for that is Umar Ballo, who is blossoming. Like he was a solid role player last year, right? This year, it's a whole other deal. And with him playing alongside Chubelis, they are both traditional bigs. Like, you're not going to ask them to step out and shoot a lot of threes. Chubelis has maybe shot 1 or 2 this entire season. You're going to leave that for Kreese, for Larson, for Courtney Ramey, for CJ Henderson. But man, oh man, they are a ton of fun. To use common parlance, they are a bit of a wagon right now. And Creighton did give them a push. It's nice to see that the Maui championship game was, you know, Arizona controlled a lot of it, but you know, it winds up with a 2-point difference in the end there, but they get it definitively. And yeah, if you wanted to make a case right now for Arizona to be a top 2, top 3 team in any kind of ranking, I think that's really compelling given the competition they faced, how they've looked, and how they are doing it. Tommy Lloyd has something special there, and Arizona gets them more than a week off after traveling to Maui. Their next game will be next Thursday. Yes, conference play already. Pac-12 has those early December games. They're going to play at Utah on December 1.
I agree. Tommy Lloyd's got something special there. I take it a step further. Like, is it too early in his coaching career to say Tommy Lloyd's special? I mean, he took over.
Only because we're just, you can say it. I won't say that yet. He's just, Okay, say it.
Tommy Lloyd's, he's something special. He took over an Arizona program that, again, was supposed to be good, but not necessarily great last season. And they end up winning everything. Pac-12 regular season title, Pac-12 tournament, get 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. Lose 3 of the top 35 draft picks in the 2022 NBA draft, 3 of his top 5 scores, and here they are again, overachieving any reasonable expectations. You touched on some of the offensive numbers. They shot 62.3% from the field against Cincinnati, 58.6% from the field against San Diego State, 52.9% from the field against Creighton. I mean, that's outrageous. I mean, those are, you know, I don't know how good Cincinnati is, but San Diego State's good and Creighton's great. And they just could not get stops against Arizona, neither of those teams. Like you said, first nationally in effective field goal percentage, 2-point field goal percentage, 5th nationally in 3-point field goal percentage. Arizona is number 1 in adjusted offensive efficiency, according to BartTorvik.com. Scored 81 points in every game, averaging 97.5 points per game. These are 40-minute basketball games. They've been great so far. So, as always, we'll see where it goes from here. But the early returns on Tommy Lloyd's second team in Arizona, really, really encouraging if you're a Wildcats fan. Let's because I know we're up against it here. Go ahead and move to the final 4-1, where I continue to dominate Norlander through 2 weeks of this season.
Actually inaccurate. Hey, Nada, what are the records for 2 weeks right now?
Y'all are tied at 5-5.
Okay, so that would not
I know,
be.
But like, what I'm trying, the point I'm making is that based on my past efforts against you, if you grade me on a scale, I've really been unbelievable so far this season.
The point I'm making is that I'm not the only one in charge of the music anymore. Nada, let's go. Here we go.
Oh.
What first game do we have, my friend? And by the way, everyone listening, YouTube, you're the best. And we're trying to get this to you as early as possible. We try to pick. I don't know if we've got any game that starts in the next like 4 or 5 hours. So anyone that might be getting this on their phone right away on Black Friday, if you're standing in line, if you're at a store or whatever, trying to give you mostly games that are going to be later in the day on Friday, plus a special one not on Friday. What are we starting with?
Yeah, here? And if you're listening to this like on Saturday or Sunday and you hear us pick a game wildly incorrectly that happened on Friday, just ignore it. Just go listen to Titus and Tate or something. Just ignore what we're doing.
Whoa.
Sir, what are you trying to do here?
Let's go.
I like those guys.
I know, I do too. Shout out to them.
Game one, Friday. You got to be confident enough in yourself to not shy away from anything else.
I would agree. Let's go.
Game one, Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. It's number 3, Kansas against number 22, Tennessee in the title game of the Battle for Atlantis inside Sebastian Bach Arena. Mm. Tennessee -1.5. You can watch it on ESPN. Among the wild things I learned earlier today, Sebastian Bach, famed frontman of Skid Row, born in the Bahamas.
Was unaware.
I would have never guessed that.
Unaware entirely. Tennessee, this is the Caesar, Nada, this is the Caesars line. Tennessee is favored in this game.
This is, yeah, Tennessee -1.5.
Tennessee was really high at KenPom is the best explanation I got for it.
Gotta be it. Oh, man. Tennessee got a good push from USC. I actually was watching a little bit of that second screen action here in Portland on Thursday. I'm going to go, GP, I'm going to go Kansas here. Kansas is 16. Kansas is 16, KenPom. And let me see what they are at Torvik right now. Kansas is, 18 at Torvik. So that would explain that a bit. But, I mean, Jalen Wilson has been terrific so far. This is the Kevin McCullough game. Grady Dick's been really good. Dwan Harris, reliable point guard. But give me McCullough to really play well here. I will take Kansas. This is a straight up situation.
Ricky was a young boy.
Oh man. Didn't see that.
I can't pick against Grady Dick. Can you pick against Grady Dick as an underdog?
I can, but I'm choosing not to pick against Dick on Friday.
I cannot pick against Grady Dick as an underdog. In fact, I'm not sure I'll ever do it. Oh. So give me Kansas. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying.
You're going to do it eventually.
I don't know. I might not do it now just so I can say that I never picked against
Grady
Dick.
I'm telling you, you're going to forget you ever had this conversation, and like 6 weeks from now, you're going to pick against Dick.
Okay, I'm going to make a note. Every time Kansas is in the final 4-1, if the Jayhawks are an underdog, I will take Kansas plus the points because of how much I believe in the combination of Bill Self and Grady Dick, plus Jalen Wilson, who is playing like an All-American. Obviously, given everything Kansas lost from that championship team, they were going to need Jalen Wilson to be an All-American level guy, and so far he has been that. Dwan Harris has taken control of games late, and Grady Dick looks like one of the best freshmen in the country. So Kansas +1.5, we both going to play it that way. Game two, Friday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. It's number 18, Alabama, versus number 20, UConn, in the Phil Knight Invitational Semifinals inside Gerald Ford Arena. Alabama -1. You can watch it on ESPN.
So this is in Veterans Memorial Coliseum, technically, but did Ford, was a DNC held there or a Republican? What's the deal with Gerald Ford?
Fun fact.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford in 1974 became the first United States president to ever attend an NBA game, and he did it at Memorial Coliseum. It was the Portland Trailblazers against the Buffalo Braves.
Okay. There we go.
You will be in the same building where Gerald Ford once watched a basketball game, dead leg.
Gerald Ford.
I had no idea you had a Gerald Ford impersonation.
That was, Gerald Ford. You don't know that? You don't know that reference?
I don't know what you're doing.
They're all hard. That was Dana Carvey doing Tom Brokaw. That's my impression of Dana Carvey's impression of Tom Brokaw saying Gerald Ford on Saturday Night.
Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot going on. Hard. Went to the Letterman show one time. Guess who the guest was?
I'm going
to
say it was Gerald Ford.
No, it's Tom Brokaw.
Okay.
Tom Brokaw and the musical guest, the great Dolly Parton.
There we go. Not bad at all. UConn-Bama is a tricky one here because UConn was so good. Alabama, I think, is the better team. I think only the line is one point. Cannot wait to watch this game. If UConn plays like it did against Oregon, then UConn's going to win. But I will go Bama in this spot. Alabama has the number one ranked 2-point percentage defense in the country right now. Now UConn was on fire from 3-point range on Thursday. We'll see if they can do that again on Friday. Just give me something really entertaining. Adama Sanogo, by the way, for UConn, has every bit to this point lived up to his preseason Big East Player of the Year moniker. Really good gains from him. In addition to everything else, UConn is getting around him. Tristan Newton, the East Carolina transfer, shooting 39% from three, big time. Alex Caravan, rolling around. Are you joining the Caravan, GP?
I'll consider it.
Okay, 39% three-point shooter. He's also been good. And Andre Jackson is back and he's playing. He's played three games to this point and still coming along, but having him involved is also a big time addition for UConn. But I think this could be a really, really good game, but I'll take Bama to win and cover.
I'm with you. I'm going to take Alabama as well. I've moved the Crimson Tide up to number 10 in the top 25 and one. So I'm going to play this game in a way that is consistent with the top 25 and one. And that means Alabama over UConn laying a point. Game three, Friday, 11:30 p.m. Eastern. Number 6, Gonzaga versus number 24, Purdue in the Phil Knight Legacy Semifinals inside Maurice Cheeks Arena. Gonzaga minus 5.5. You can watch it on ESPN.
Smelling any upset here, GP?
Ooh, you know how I feel about Matt Painter. If you don't mind me patting myself on the back a little bit, I ranked Purdue the entire offseason. And even some Purdue fans were like, why are you ranking us? Like, we don't have the roster is not great. I said, I don't know if the roster is great, but you got Zach Edey. And more importantly, you have Matt Painter. I think for 7 straight seasons, Purdue is finishing the top 25 at KenPom. So I'm going to trust him to do it again. And the early returns are encouraging. Edey was terrific on Thursday. And now, you know, we've already had Drew Timmy, Oscar Tshiebwe. We get Drew Timmy, Zach Edey. That'll be a lot of fun.
That will be. I will take Purdue to cover here. I'll take Gonzaga to win, but I will take Purdue to get the cover. And GP, do you have the schedule in front of you? Is this the last game of the day? This isn't the last game. It might be the second to last game. Let me look this up real quick.
It's got to be. I mean, 11:30. You're going to go later than 11:30 p.m. Eastern? Tip in Portland tonight?
Yeah, Oregon, Michigan State technically tips later. The last game, and we are not picking Ducks, Sparty, but that is the last game of the day is Oregon, Michigan State. So, damn. Okay, yeah, that's how I'll be there. I'll be bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, I just might have to wake up and see how that went.
You're just going
to
wake up. I don't blame you for that. But give me Purdue to cover, Gonzaga to win.
Yeah, I got to be different than you somewhere. I'll lay the points with the Zags, but
you do not have to be. I'm just letting you know. You have autonomy. You can pick whatever you damn well please. And if it's the same as me, in your heart of hearts, if you want to pick the same game, that's fine. Like, that's completely allowable. I'm not
two things I'm committing to.
Oh, boy.
I will never pick against Grady Dick as an underdog. And I will, in game three every Friday, go opposite of you, no matter what it is.
Ridiculous.
I'm going to fade you on game three. I don't think your game three track record's very good. So I'm going Gonzaga minus 5.5.
Six and a half.
It was 5.5 before we started this podcast.
6.5 in the document I'm looking at. So. Well,
then, no. Let me look and see what we got right now. I'm not going to have to lay an extra point because you guys are doing some funny business on me. I think you're doing... It is 6.5. It's moved up.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were doing funny business. I thought you were doing funny business on me. Okay, I'll wear 6.5. I was wrong.
All right.
All that means is money's coming in on Gonzaga. I'm on the right side of this. It's me and the Sharps taking the Zags minus 6.5. Game 4, Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern. St. Louis at number 13, Auburn inside Chris Porter Arena. KenPom has it Auburn minus 8. You can watch it on the SEC Network.
Auburn minus 8, according to KenPom. Ooh, baby. Dude, I didn't watch any of the game. Am I remembering this? Did Auburn beat Northwestern by one? And I was like, what was it? Was 43-42.
That was a rough one. We had it was on, we had it on CBS 42. Sports Network.
Oh, was it a CBS? Oh, yeah. Gosh. And you were in studio.
I was in studio.
I had that. How'd that viewing session go for you?
You know, we were eating dinner and watching the game. It's fine.
All right. So the game wasn't so offensive that you were incapable of keeping food down.
No, I swallowed all my food.
Okay. All right, man. Oh, man. That's
3 years ago. I almost choked to death on lamb in the CBS Sports, in the CBS Broadcast Center. It was almost over for me.
It was almost over. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I survived it, but like, I almost choked to death. That's a true story.
After a 1-point Northwestern loss, few people know that. I will say, man, St. Louis right now is 5-1. The only loss run out of the gym against Maryland, undefeated right now, Terps, 95-67, 6 days ago. St. Louis does have a neutral court win over Providence, has defeated Memphis. By the way, outrageous way for Seton Hall to beat Memphis on Thanksgiving.
Dude, you don't even know what happened before that. Memphis had 2 free throws, missed them both. Okay, it's a 2-point game. They got 2 free throws, like 6 seconds to go. Missed them both, all right? Then gets the offensive rebound. I believe it was Chandler Lawson. All he's got to do is hold it. They're going to foul him again. He's going back to the, he's going to the free throw line, up 2. He decides to try to pass it. They get a steal and then a timeout. And then Seton Hall banks in a 3 at the buzzer to beat the Tigers by a point. Like we all, you always hear things like, "Ah, they gave one away." I mean, they literally gave the game away. All you got to do, you got the offensive rebound, just hold the ball. They'll foul you. You go to the free throw line. It was outrageous behavior.
That is outrageous. 8 is just enough here for me. Yeah, what a way to lose. St. Louis has the best guard on the floor in this game, Yuri Collins. I will take SLU to cover. You know how we feel about our Billikens on this pod. Give me SLU to cover, but Auburn to win. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to take SLU to cover as well. I mean, we have Billiken belts for crying out loud.
It's true.
Not to mention, you're looking at Master of Ceremonies, A10 Media Day, pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Don't ever forget that. St. Louis is good. I don't know what happened at Maryland. that was ridiculous. But I still think St. Louis is solid. 5-1 so far, like you mentioned. They beat Memphis, beat Providence. I think they stay within that 8. Maybe can't fall short. Maybe fall short of winning the game at Auburn, but can stay within that 8. At the under 4, we'll be in a game that is still up for grabs. That's my prediction. And if that's wrong, just move on to something else.
Final game. Going down today.
It's going Friday. Down today.
Going down. It is.
Ricky was a young boy. Sebastian Bach from the Bahamas. Who would have ever assumed that?
This is a 5:30 Eastern tip, 2:30 local. Inside Jerry Garcia Coliseum.
What?
Can I get a little box of rain from you, GP?
Nope. Nope. Nope.
Sure?
I wouldn't consider myself a deadhead.
Probably not.
You took suggestions on what to listen to on your flight to Portland. What'd you listen to?
Don't have time for that. I got to get out of here. You How about a little nerd. Casey Jones from you, GP?
I mean, I do know that.
Trouble
song.
Ahead. Trouble driving behind.
A train. Is it high on cocaine?
Yeah, correct.
Was he high on cocaine driving a train? That sounds dangerous.
Yeah, there we go.
That sounds dangerous.
Grateful Dead, obviously, 4 years ago. Portland Memorial Coliseum, as it was known then. 6 LP. 19 CD box set was released. May of 74. How do you not know that? Stint. Big time. UNC Iowa State. Offense versus defense. The line we have here is UNC minus 5.5. Who you got?
I was thinking about driving a train high on cocaine. I don't even know what game we're talking about.
UNC Iowa State inside Jerry Garcia Coliseum.
I think North Carolina finally performs to expectations and beats Iowa State by enough to cover that number.
I'm going to agree with you.
Oh, you.
Sorry. I'm going to agree here. I'm going to agree. Carolina gets it done. They get their act together. They turn around quick, and they win. And they win. How about this? I'll say UNC by double digits.
Ooh. UNC
by double digits. Leaky Black, don't let us down.
Seriously.
All right, we ready to go?
Let's get out of here.
Ricky was a young boy. That old Ricky, man, he went through it, you know? I know. Life took a turn of events for him. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Huck. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify at Apple. 5 stars, nice review. There's more of us than there are of them. I don't have any doubt Ricky was one of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'd bet my life on it.
Yeah.
I'd bet my life on it. Yeah. We'll talk to you again. I think actually Monday morning we're going to talk to you again because the events in Portland are late, really late Sunday night. And there's a chance, like, we're going to need to be talking about that stuff. And we're not doing a 1 a.m. podcast. Not in November. We will in March, but not in November. So we're going to talk to you again on Monday morning. I'll tweet out the exact time when we know it. Till then, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Take care.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.